You have felt her spear of light scorch your forces in combat. Her stamina is steel. Her faith is unwavering. She has overcome her father's sway. She saved our ship from the dreaded Vatnavatir. She outflew the great Boggy in his eagle form, delivering Kvasir's mead to our crew. And she has done all of this while fasting for Ramadan. Several giants gasped. Some put their hands to their throats, as if just realizing how thirsty they were.
Samira, Loki growled. Turn into a lizard and scuttle away, my dear.
Sam frowned at him. No, father. I don't think I will. Why don't you?
Ooh.
Some of the giants even clapped. I was definitely taller than usual now. Or wait, Loki was getting shorter. But I needed more. I turned to Alex.
Let me tell you all about Alex Fierro.
Saving the best for last? Alex asked, a hint of challenge in her voice.
She is our secret weapon, I said. The terror of Jorvik. The creator of Pottery Barn. Ceramic warrior.
I got some lovely placemats at Pottery Barn, one of the giants muttered to a friend.
At the House of Chase, he decapitated a wolf with nothing more than a wire, then drank guava juice from the horn of my ancestors.
He? Asked a giant. Just go with it, said another.
She once decapitated Grimwolf the Elder Lindworm, I continued. She defeated the sorcery of Utgard Loki in a bowling tournament of horrors. She won the trust and affection of the goddess Siv. She kept me alive across the frozen sea of Niflheim. And when she kissed me under that blanket yesterday,
I met Alex's two-color eyes. Well, that was just about the best thing that ever happened to me. I turned toward Loki. My face was burning. I'd spoken maybe just a wee bit more truth than I'd intended, but I couldn't let that break my momentum. Loki, you asked me who I am? I'm part of this team. I'm Magnus Chase from Floor 19, Hotel Valhalla. I'm the son of Frey, son of Natalie. Friend of Mallory, Halfborn, TJ, Blitzen, Hearthstone, Samira, and Alex. This is my family. This is my Othala. I know they will always support me, which is why I'm standing here triumphant on your ship, surrounded by my family. And you, even in the midst of thousands, you are still alone. Loki hissed. He backed into a wall of scowling Draugr.
I am not alone. Sigun, dear wife.
Sigun had vanished. At some point during the flighting, she must have retreated into the crowd. That silent act spoke louder than centuries of verbal abuse.
Alex? Samira?
Loki tried for a confident smile.
Come on, my dears. You know I love you. Don't be difficult. Kill your friends for me, and all will be forgiven.
Alex adjusted her shaggy green fur cloak over her sweater vest.
Sorry, Mom. I'm afraid I gotta say no.
Loki dashed toward Samira, who pushed him back at spear point. The trickster was about 3 feet tall now. He tried changing form. Fur sprouted across his brow. fishy scales appeared on the backs of his hands. Nothing seemed to stick.
You can't hide from yourself, Loki, I said. No matter what form you take, you're still you. Alone, scorned, bitter, faithless. Your insults are hollow and desperate. You don't stand a chance against us, because you don't have an us. You are Loki, always alone.
I hate you all, the god screamed, spittle flying. Acid oozed from his pores, hissing against the deck.
None of you are worthy of my company, much less my leadership.
As Loki shrank, his scarred face rippled, contorting with rage. Acid steamed in puddles all around him. I wondered if this was all the venom that Skadi's viper had dripped on him over the centuries, or if it was simply part of Loki's essence. Perhaps Sigun had tried to shield Loki from the snake because she knew her husband was already full of poison. He could barely keep his human form from liquefying into the stuff.
You think your happy friendship speech means anything? He snarled. Is it time for a group hug now? You make me sick!
You'll have to speak up, I said. It's hard to hear you from way down there.
Loki paced and ranted, no more than a few inches tall now, wading through puddles of his own venom.
I will kill you slowly. I will have hell torture the spirits of everyone you love. I will...
Escape? Samira asked, blocking Loki with her spear point as he darted left. He ran to the right, but Alex put down her pink ski boot to stop him.
I don't think so, Mom, said Alex. I like you down there. And now, Mallory Keene has a lovely parting gift for you.
Mallory hopped forward and brought out the walnut.
No!
Loki squeaked.
No, you wouldn't dare. I will never.
Mallory tossed the nut toward the miniature god. The shell opened, inhaling Loki with a vicious sucking noise, then snapped shut again. The walnut rattled and quivered on the deck. A little voice was shouting obscenities from inside, but the shell remained sealed. The giants frowned down at the walnut. Captain Frim cleared his throat.
Well, that was interesting.
He turned to me.
Congratulations, Magnus Chase. You won that flighting fair and square. I am impressed. I hope you'll accept my apology for having to kill you all now.
Chapter 44. Why do they get cannons? I want cannons. I did not accept his apology. Neither did my friends. They formed a protective ring around me and began slashing through the enemy ranks, slowly shuffling toward the starboard side of the ship. Still hopping on one leg, Mallory Keene scooped up her evil walnut and dropped it in her pocket, then demonstrated her dual knife-wielding prowess by stabbing her blades into Captain Hrim's crotch. Halfborn and TJ fought like killing machines. I didn't want to give myself credit for their gusto, but the way they plowed through troops of Draugr was awe-inspiring, almost as if they were determined to be as good as I'd described them, as if my words had made them larger while making Loki smaller.
Follow me!
Sam yelled, her spear of light blasting a path to starboard. Alex swung her garrote like a whip, lopping off the heads of any giants who came too close. I was afraid Blitzen might get trampled in the crush, but Hearthstone knelt and let the dwarf climb onto his shoulders. Okay, that was a new one. I didn't think Hearth had the physical strength to carry Blitz, who was short but stout and hardly a little kid. Yet Hearth managed. and from the unquestioning way Blitz accepted the ride, I got the feeling they'd done this before. Blitz threw neckties and expandeducts like Mardi Gras beads, sowing terror in the enemy's ranks. Meanwhile, Hearth lobbed a familiar rune toward the foredeck. Awaz, the rune of the steed, exploded with golden light. Suddenly, floating in the air above us, was our old friend Stanley, the eight-legged horse. Stanley surveyed the chaos, whinnied as if to say, "Fight scene cameo? Okay." Then he leaped into the fray, fly galloping on the skulls of Yotuns and generally causing havoc. Jack, buzzing angrily, flew to my side. "I have a blade to grind with you, senor." "What?" I ducked as a spear flew over my head. "You give this beautiful speech," Jack said. "And who do you leave out?" "Really?" Jack hilt-punched a giant so hard, the poor guy flew backward, domino-toppling a line of zombie cavalry. I gulped down my mortification. How could I have forgotten my sword? Jack hated being forgotten. "Jack, you were my secret weapon," I said.
"You said that about Alex."
You were my ace in the hole. I was saving the best for, you know, emergency poetry."
"A likely story."
He chopped through the nearest clump of Draugr like a Vitamix.
I'll get Braggy, the god of poetry, to personally write an epic about you," I blurted out,
regretting the promise as soon as I made it.
"You're the best sword ever, honestly."
"An epic, huh?" He glowed a brighter shade of red. Or maybe that was all the gore dripping from his blade.
"By Braggy, huh?"
"Absolutely," I said. "Now let's get out of here. Show me your best stuff so, you know, I can describe it to Braggy later."
"Humph."
Jack whirled toward a metropolitan giant, snicker snacking him into natty pieces.
"I suppose I can do that."
He went to work, slashing our enemies like a frantic Black Friday shopper rifling through clothes racks.
"No, no, no," Jack yelled. "I don't like you. Get out of my way. You're ugly."
Soon our little cluster of heroes reached the starboard rail. Unfortunately, the drop over the side was 400 feet at least, straight into the icy gray waters. My stomach twisted. This was twice as long a fall as the one I'd flubbed from the mainmast of Old Ironsides.
"We'll die if we jump," Mallory noted.
The enemy horde pressed us against the rail. No matter how well we fought, our enemies wouldn't even have to hit us to kill us now. Their sheer numbers would flatten us or push us overboard. I pulled out my yellow handkerchief.
"I can summon Mikilguler, the way we did in Aegir's Hall."
"Except we're falling down now," Alex said. "Not floating up. And there's no Niord to protect us."
"She's right,"
Blitz yelled, throwing a generous handful of neckties to his admirers.
"Even if the ship doesn't break apart on impact, all our bones will."
Sam peered over the side.
"And even if we survived, those guns would blow our ship out of the water."
"Guns?" I followed her gaze. I hadn't noticed them before. Probably because the ports had been closed. But now the side of Naglfar's hull bristled with rows of cannon muzzles.
"That's not fair," I said. "Vikings didn't have cannons. How come Naglfar gets cannons?"
TJ jabbed a zombie with his bayonet.
"I'll be sure to lodge a complaint with the Ragnarok Rules Committee. But right now, whatever we're going to do, we need to do it."
"Agreed,"
Halfborn shouted, his axe slicing through a pack of skeletal wolves.
"I've got a plan," Sam announced. "You're not going to like it."
"I love it," Blitz cried. "What is it?"
"Jump,"
Sam said. Alex ducked a javelin.
"But the whole breaking every bone in our bodies thing?" "No time to explain," Sam said.
"Jump!"
When your Valkyrie tells you to jump, you jump. I was the first one over the side. I tried to remember what Percy had told me. Skydiver, eagle, arrow, but, though I knew that falling from this height, none of it would matter. I hit the water with a mighty flume. I had died enough times to know what to expect. A sudden, overwhelming surge of pain, followed by complete darkness. But that didn't happen. Instead, I bobbed to the surface, gasping and shivering, but completely unharmed. I realized something was buoying me up. The water churned and bubbled around me like I'd fallen into a jacuzzi. Between my legs, the current felt almost solid, as if I was sitting astride a creature sculptured from the sea. Directly in front of me, a head rose from the waves. A strong neck of gray water, a mane of frost, a majestic snout spewing plumes of icy mist from its nostrils. I was riding a Vatnavatir, a water horse. My friends plunged into the water too, each dropping right onto the back of a waiting horse spirit. The Vatnavatir whinnied and bucked as spears rained down around us. "Let's move!" Sam swooped down with her blazing spear and settled onto the back of the lead water horse. "Toward the mouth of the bay!" The horses raced away from the ship of the dead. Giants and Draugr screamed in outrage. Spears and arrows splashed in the water. Cannons boomed. Shells exploded near enough to spray us with water. But the Vatnavatir were faster and more maneuverable than any ship. They zigged and zagged, rocketing across the bay with incredible speed. Jack flew up beside me. "Hey, senor, did you see that one disembowelment I did?" "Yeah," I said. "It was amazing. And the way I cut off that Jotun's limbs." "Right. I hope you were taking notes for Braggy's epic." "Absolutely." I made a mental note to start taking more mental notes. A different equine figure zoomed above us. Stanley, the eight-legged horse, checking that we were okay. He whinnied like, "Okay, guess we're done here. Have a nice day." Then he shot toward the steel-gray clouds. The water horse was surprisingly warm, like a living animal, which kept my legs and crotch from freezing completely in the frigid water. Still, I remembered Mallory's and Halfborn's stories about Vatnavatir dragging their victims to the bottom of the sea. How was Samira controlling them? If the herd decided to take a dive, we were all dead. Yet we kept racing forward, toward the gap in the glaciers at the mouth of the bay. Already I could see the water beginning to refreeze, the ice floes thickening and hardening. Summer in Niflheim, which lasted about 12 minutes, was now over. Behind us, the boom of cannons carried over the water, but the ship Naglfar remained at its moorings. I could only hope, since we had their admiral in a walnut, the ship would be forced to stay there. We shot out of the bay into the frosty sea, our water horses picking us a path through the broken ice floes. Then, we turned south toward the much safer, monster-infested open waters of Jotunheim. Chapter 45. If you understand what happens in this chapter, please tell me, because I have no clue. 3 days is a long time to sail with an evil walnut. After the water horses dumped us, they got bored, Sam explained, which was far better than them drowning us. I summoned the big banana, and we all climbed aboard. Hearthstone managed to invoke the fire rune Kenots, which saved us from freezing to death. We sailed west, trusting our magic ship to take us where we needed to go. The first 12 hours or so, we were all running on pure adrenaline and terror. We got into dry clothes. I healed Mallory's foot. We ate. We didn't talk much. We grunted and pointed at things we needed. No one slept. Sam chanted her prayers, which was amazing, since the rest of us probably couldn't have formed simple sentences. Finally, When the gray sun sank and the world still hadn't ended, we started to believe that Naglfar really wasn't sailing after us. Loki would not be busting out of his tiny prison. Ragnarok wouldn't be starting this summer, at least. We had survived. Mallory clutched the walnut. She refused to let go of it. She huddled against the prow, examining the sea with narrowed eyes, her red hair whipping in the wind. After about an hour of this, half-born Gunderson sat down next to her. She didn't kill him. He muttered to her for a long time, words I didn't try to hear. She started to cry, expelling something from herself that sounded almost as bitter as Loki's venom. Halfborn put his arm around her, looking not happy exactly, but content. The next day, Blitzen and Hearthstone went into nurturing mode, making sure everybody had food, everybody was warm enough, nobody was alone if they didn't want to be. Hearth spent a lot of time listening to TJ talk about war and slavery, and what constituted an honorable challenge. Hearth was an excellent listener. Blitz sat with Alex Fierro all afternoon, showing her how to make a sweater vest out of chainmail. I wasn't sure Alex needed a chainmail sweater vest, but the work seemed to calm them both. After her evening prayers, Samira came up to me and offered me a date. The kind you eat, of course. We chewed our fruit and watched the strange constellations of Jotunheim blink above us.
"You were amazing," Sam said.
I let that sink in. Samira wasn't big on doling out praise, any more than Mallory was big on doling out apologies. "Well, it wasn't poetry," I said at last. "More like pure panic."
"Maybe there's not much difference," Sam said. "Besides, just take the compliment, Chase."
"Okay. Thank you." I stood next to her, watching the horizon. It felt nice just to be with a friend, enjoying the stars, not worrying about dying in the next 5 minutes. "You did great, too," I said. "You stood up to Loki and defeated him." Sam smiled.
"Yeah. I had a lot of thanks to give in my prayers tonight."
I nodded. I wondered if I should be thanking someone, too. I mean, apart from my friends on the boat, of course. Sigun, maybe, for her silent support, her passive resistance against her husband. If the gods put Loki back in his cave, I wondered if Sigun would be going with him. Maybe Uncle Randolph deserved a thank you, too, for leaving me those notes about Kvasir's mead. He'd tried to do something right at the end, no matter how spectacularly he'd betrayed me. Thinking about Randolph reminded me of the voices from Helheim, tempting me to join them in the darkness. I locked that memory away. I wasn't feeling strong enough to face it just yet. Sam pointed toward Alex, who was trying on her new sweater vest.
"You should go talk to her, Magnus. That was kind of a bombshell you dropped during the flighting."
"You mean... oh." My stomach curled with embarrassment, like it was trying to hide behind my right lung. In front of my 8 closest friends and several thousand enemies, I'd announced how much I'd enjoyed a private kiss from Alex. Sam chuckled.
"She probably won't be too mad. Go. Get it over with."
Easy for Sam to say. She knew exactly where she stood in her relationship with Amir. She was happily engaged and never had to worry about secret kisses under blankets because she was a good Muslim girl and would never do such a thing. I, alas, was not a good Muslim girl. I walked over to Alex. Blitzen saw me coming, nodded to me nervously, and fled.
"What do you think, Magnus?"
Alex spread her arms, showing off her glittering new fashion statement. "Yeah," I said. "I mean, not many people can pull off the plaid chainmail sweater vest, but yeah."
"It's not plaid," Alex said. It's more a cuadros, like diamonds. Checkered.
Okay.
So...
She crossed her arms and sighed, examining me like, what are we going to do with you? It was a look I'd gotten from teachers, coaches, social workers, police, and a few of my closest relatives.
That declaration of yours back on Naglfar, that was all very sudden, Magnus.
Yeah. I wasn't really thinking.
Clearly. Where did that even come from?
Well, you did kiss me.
I mean, you can't surprise somebody like that.
Suddenly I'm the greatest thing that ever happened to you? I didn't exactly say... I stopped myself. Look, if you want me to take it back... I couldn't form a complete thought. And I couldn't see any way to extract myself from this conversation with my dignity intact. I wondered if I was suffering withdrawal symptoms from Cavassier's mead, paying the price for my successful performance on Naglfar.
I'm going to need some time, Alex said. I mean, I'm flattered, but this is all so out of the blue.
I don't just date any and hair ye with a pretty face and a nice haircut. No, yeah. Pretty face?
I appreciate the offer, really. But let's put this on hold and I'll get back to you.
She held up her hands.
A little space, Chase.
She strode off, glancing back once with a smirk that made my toes curl up in my woolen socks. Hearthstone appeared at my side, his expression inscrutable as always. His scarf, for reasons unknown, had changed to a cuadros, red and white checkers. We watched Alex walking away.
What just happened?
I asked him.
There are no words for it in sign language, he said.
On our third morning at sea, TJ called from the halyard, Hey! Land! I thought the expression was land ho, but maybe they did things differently in the Civil War. We all jostled to the prow of the Big Banana. A vast, flat landscape of red and gold spread across the horizon, as if we were sailing straight toward the Saharan Desert.
That's not Boston, I noted.
That's not even Midgard,
Halfborn frowned.
If our ship followed the currents Naglfar would have taken, that means...
We're landing at Vigrider,
Mallory offered.
The last battlefield. This is the place where we'll all die someday.
Strangely, nobody screamed, Turn this boat around. We stood transfixed as the Big Banana took us in, aiming for one of a jillion docks that jutted into the surf. At the end of the pier, a group of figures stood waiting, men and women, all resplendent in glittering armor and colorful cloaks. The gods had turned out to welcome us. Chapter 46. I win a fluffy bathrobe. Along the abandoned shore, which was built up with the universe's longest boardwalk, stretched thousands of empty kiosks and miles of stanchions for queuing, with signs pointing this way and that. Jotun's right, left Acer, will call right, left school groups. Our dock featured a large red sign with a stylized bird and a big number 5. Underneath, in English and in runes, the sign read, Remember, you parked at Raven 5. Have a nice Ragnarok. I supposed our parking situation could have been worse. We could have docked at Bunny Rabbit 12 or Ferret 1. I recognized many of the gods in our greeting party. Frigg stood in her cloud-white dress and glowing warhelm, her bag of knitting supplies under one arm. She smiled kindly at Mallory.
My daughter! I knew you would succeed!
I wasn't sure if she meant that in an I-could-tell-your-future way, or an I-had-faith-in-you way, but I thought it was nice of her to say regardless. Heimdall, the guardian of the Rainbow Bridge, grinned at me, his stark white eyes like frozen milk.
I saw you coming from 5 miles away, Magnus. That yellow boat. Wow!
Thor looked like he'd just woken up. His red hair was flat on one side, his face creased with pillow marks. His hammer, Mjolnir, hung at his belt, attached to his breeches with a bike chain. He scratched his hairy abs under his Metallica t-shirt and farted amiably.
I hear you insulted Loki into a little 2-inch-tall man. Good work.
His wife, Siv, with the flowing golden hair, rushed to embrace Alex Fierro.
My dear, you look lovely. Is that a new sweater vest?
A big man I'd never seen before, with dark skin, a glistening bald scalp, and black leather armor, offered his left hand to Thomas Jefferson Jr. The god's right hand was missing, the wrist covered in a gold cap.
My son, you've done well.
TJ's mouth fell open. Dad?
Take my hand. I challenge you to take my hand.
The god Tyr amended.
I accept, TJ said,
and let himself be hauled onto the dock. Odin was wearing a 3-piece suit in charcoal gray chainmail that I'd guessed was custom-made by Blitzen himself. The Allfather's beard was neatly trimmed. His eye patch gleamed like stainless steel. His ravens, thought and memory, perched on his shoulders, their black feathers complementing his jacket beautifully.
Hearthstone, he said. Well done with the rune magic, lad. Those visualization tricks I taught you must have really paid off.
Hearth smiled weakly. From the back of the crowd, two other gods pushed forward. I'd never seen them together before. But now it was obvious how alike the twin brother and sister were. Freya, goddess of love and wealth, shone in her golden gown, the scent of roses wafting around her.
Oh, Blitzen, my beautiful boy!
She cried red-gold tears, shedding about $40,000 worth all over the dock as she embraced her son. Next to her stood my dad, Frey, god of summer. In his battered jeans, flannel shirt, and boots, his blonde hair and beard wild and unkempt, he looked like he'd just come back from a 3-day hike.
Magnus, he said,
as if we'd just seen each other 5 minutes ago.
Hey, Dad.
He reached over hesitantly and patted my arm.
Good job. Really.
In runestone form, Jack buzzed and tugged until I let him off my neck chain. He expanded into sword form, glowing purple with irritation.
Hi, Jack,
he said, mimicking Frey's deep voice.
How you doing, Jack, old buddy?
Frey winced. Hello, Sumar Brander. I didn't mean to ignore you.
Yeah.
Well, Magnus here is going to get braggy to write an epic poem about me.
Frey raised an eyebrow.
You are?
That's right, Jack huffed. Frey never got braggy to write an epic poem about me. The only thing he ever gave me was a stupid Hallmark Swords Day card.
Added to my mental notes, there was such a thing as Swords Day. I silently cursed the greeting card industry. My father smiled, a little sadly.
You're right, Jack. A good sword deserves a good friend.
Frey squeezed my shoulder.
and it looks like you found one. I appreciated the heartwarming sentiment. On the other hand, I was afraid my dad had just turned my rash promise about finding Braggy into a divinely ordained decree.
"Friends," Odin called, "let us retire to our feasting tent on the field of Vigridr. I have reserved tent Lindworm 7. That's Lindworm 7. If you get lost, follow the mauve arrows. Once there," his expression turned brooding, "we will discuss the fate of all living things."
I'm telling you, you can't even get a meal with these gods without discussing the fate of all living things. The feast tent was set up in the middle of the field of Vigridr, which was a long way from the docks, since, according to Samira, Vigridr stretched 300 miles in every direction. Fortunately, Odin had arranged for a small fleet of golf carts. The landscape was mostly grasslands of red and gold, with the occasional river, hill, and stand of trees, just for variety. The pavilion itself was made of cured leather, the sides open, the main hearth blazing, and the tables laden with food. It made me think of pictures I'd seen from old travel magazines, of people having luxury safari banquets on the African savanna. My mom used to love travel magazines. The gods sat at the Thane's table, as one might expect. Valkyries hurried around serving everyone, though they got distracted when they saw Samira and came over to give her hugs and gossip. Once everyone was settled and the mead was poured, Odin pronounced in a grave voice,
"Bring forth the walnut."
Mallory rose. With a quick glance at Frigg, who nodded encouragement, Mallory walked to a freestanding stone pedestal in front of the hearth. She set down the walnut, then returned to her seat. The gods all leaned forward. Thor glowered. Tyr laced his left-hand fingers with the non-existent digits on his right hand. Frey stroked his blonde beard. Freya pouted.
"I don't like walnuts, even if they are a great source of omega-3 fatty acids."
"This walnut has no nutritional value, sister," Frey said. "It holds Loki."
"Yes, I know,"
she frowned.
"I was just saying, in general."
"Is Loki quite secure?"
Tyr asked.
"He won't pop out and challenge me to personal combat?"
The god sounded wistful, as if he'd been dreaming about that possibility.
"The walnut will hold him," Frigg said. "At least until we return him to his chains."
"Bah!" Thor raised his hammer. "I say, I should just smash him right now. Save us all a lot of trouble."
"Honey," said Siv, "we've talked about this."
"Indeed,"
said Odin, his raven squawking on the high back of his throne.
"My noble son Thor, we've been over this approximately 8,630 times. I'm not sure we're using strategies for active listening. We cannot change our foretold destinies."
Thor huffed.
"Well, what's the use of being a god then? I've got a perfectly good hammer, and this nut is just begging to be cracked. Why not crack it?"
That sounded like a pretty reasonable plan to me, but I didn't say so. I was not in the habit of disagreeing with Odin the Allfather, who controlled my afterlife and my minibar privileges at the Hotel Valhalla. "Maybe," I said, self-conscious as all eyes turned toward me.
"I don't know. We could come up with a more secure place to keep him, at least. Like, I'm just thinking aloud here. A maximum security prison with actual guards? And chains that aren't made from the intestines of his sons? Or, you know, we could just avoid the intestine thing altogether."
Odin chuckled, like I was a puppy that had learned a new trick.
Magnus Chase, you and your friends have acted bravely and nobly. Now, you must leave matters to the gods. We cannot change Loki's punishment in any meaningful way. We can only restore it to what it was, so that the great sequence of events leading to Ragnarok will be held in check. At least for now.
Humph. Thor quaffed his mead.
We keep delaying Ragnarok. Why not just get it over with? I could use a good fight.
Well, my son, said Frigg, we are delaying Ragnarok because it will destroy the cosmos as we know it. And because most of us will die. You included.
Besides, Heimdall added, we just now got the ability to take quality selfies on our cell phones. Can you imagine how much better the tech will be in a few more centuries? I can't wait to VR stream the apocalypse to my millions of followers on the cybercloud.
With a pensive expression, Tyr pointed to a nearby copse of golden trees.
I will die right over there. Killed by Garm, the guard dog of hell. But not before I smite his head in. I can't wait for that day. I dream of Garm's fangs ripping into my stomach.
Thor nodded sympathetically, like, yes, good times. I scanned the horizon. I, too, was destined to die here at Ragnarok, assuming I didn't get killed in some dangerous quest before then. I didn't know the exact location, but we might be having lunch in the very spot where I would be impaled, or Halfborn would fall with a sword in his gut, or Alex. I couldn't think about it. Suddenly, I wanted to be anywhere but here. Samira coughed for attention.
Lord Odin, she said. What are your plans for Loki, then, since his original bonds were cut?
Odin smiled.
Not to worry, my brave Valkyrie. Loki will be returned to the Cave of Punishment. We will put new enchantments upon the place to hide its location and prevent further breaches. We will reforge his bonds, making sure they are stronger than ever. The best dwarven smiths have agreed to undertake this task.
The best dwarven smiths? Blitz asked. Heimdall nodded enthusiastically.
We got a package deal on all four bindings from Atri Jr.
Blitz started to curse, but Hearthstone clamped a hand over his friend's mouth. I thought for sure Blitzen would get up and start throwing expandedux in a fit of rage.
I see, said Samira,
clearly not excited about Odin's plan. What about Sigun? I asked. Will you let her stay by Loki's side again, if she wants? Odin frowned.
I had not considered this.
It wouldn't do any harm, I said quickly. She means well, I think. I'm pretty sure she didn't want him to escape in the first place. The gods muttered among themselves. Alex gave me a questioning look, no doubt wondering why I cared so much about the wife of Loki. I wasn't sure myself why I felt it was important. If Sigun wanted to be by Loki's side, whether it was for compassion or some other reason, I figured it was the least the gods could do for her. Especially considering they'd murdered her kids and used the guts as chains for their dad. I remembered what Loki had told me about good and evil, gods and giants. He had a point. I wasn't necessarily sitting with the good guys. I was just sitting with one side of the final war.
Very well, Odin decided. Sigun may stay with Loki if she wishes. Any other questions about Loki's punishment?
I could tell that a lot of my friends wanted to stand up and say, yes, are you crazy? But no one did. None of the gods raised objections or pulled out weapons.
I must say, Freya noted, this is the best godly meeting we've had in centuries.
She smiled at me.
We tried to avoid having too many of us together in one place. It usually leads to trouble.
The last time was the flighting with Loki,
Thor grumbled.
In Aegir's hall.
I didn't like being reminded of Aegir, but it made me remember a promise. Lord Odin, I was supposed to bring Aegir a sample of Kvasir's mead, as payment for him sort of not killing us and sort of letting us go, but...
Never fear, Magnus Chase. I will speak with Aegir on your behalf. I may even grant him a small sample of Kvasir's mead from my special reserve supply, assuming he'll put me on the list for his pumpkin spice.
And me,
Thor said. And me, said the other gods, raising their hands. I blinked.
You have a special reserve supply of Kvasir's mead?
Of course, said Odin.
This raised some interesting questions, such as why had the gods made us run all around creation risking our lives to get that mead from the giants, when Odin could have just handed me some? That simple solution probably hadn't even occurred to Odin. He was a leader, not a sharer. My father caught my eye. He shook his head like, don't ask. Aesir are weird.
Well then, Odin pounded his fist on the table. I agree with Freya. This meeting has gone surprisingly well. We will take the walnut. We will send you heroes back to Valhalla to enjoy a great feast in your honor. Any other business before we adjourn?
Lord Odin, Frey said. My son and his friends have done us a great service. Shouldn't we reward them? Isn't that customary? Odin nodded.
I suppose you're right. I could make them all in Herjar and Valhalla, but, most of them already are.
And the rest of us, Sam added quickly, would like to stay alive a little longer, Lord Odin, if you don't mind.
Well, there you are, Odin said. As a reward, our living heroes will get to stay alive. I'll also give you each 5 autographed copies of my new book, Motivational Heroism. As for the Inherjar, in addition to the celebratory feast and the books, I'll throw in a complimentary Hotel Valhalla Turkish bathrobe for each of you. Eh?
Odin seemed so pleased with himself, none of us had the heart to complain. We just nodded and smiled half-heartedly.
Turkish bathrobe,
TJ said.
Staying alive, Blitz said.
Nobody mentioned the autographed motivational books.
Finally, Magnus Chase, said the Allfather. I understand you were the one who stood toe-to-toe with Loki and took the brunt of his withering insults. Would you ask any special boon of the gods?
I gulped. I looked around at my friends, trying to let them know that I didn't find it fair for me to get special treatment. Defeating Loki had been a group effort. That was the whole point. Waxing poetic about our team was what got Loki trapped, not my skill itself. Besides, I didn't keep a list of boons in my back pocket. I was a man of few needs. I was happy being boonless. Then I recalled Uncle Randolph's last act of atonement, trying to steer me toward Kvasir's mead. I thought about how sad and lonely his house seemed now, and how happy and peaceful I'd felt on the roof deck with Alex Fierro. I even remembered a bit of advice Aunt Vari's ring had whispered in my mind, right before I'd given the golden treasure back to the fish. Othala. Inheritance.
the hardest rune of all to make sense of.
"Actually, Lord Odin," I said, "there is one favor I would ask."
Chapter 47. Surprises all around. Some of them even good. Your typical trip back home. Golf cart rides. Trying to remember where we parked our warship. Sailing into the treacherous mouth of an unknown river. Getting sucked into rapids that shot us into the tunnels underneath Valhalla. Jumping off a moving ship and watching the big banana disappear into the darkness. No doubt on its way to pick up the next lucky group of adventurers bound for glory, death, and Ragnarok postponing shenanigans. The other Inherjar welcomed us as heroes and carried us to the feast hall for a big celebration. There, we found that Helgi had arranged a special surprise for Samira, thanks to a tip-off from Odin himself. Standing by our regular table, looking very confused, wearing a name tag around his neck that proclaimed, "Visitor, mortal, do not kill," was Amir Fodlon. He blinked several times when he saw Sam.
I am so confused. Are you real?
Samira tented her hands over her face. Her eyes teared up.
Oh, I'm real. I so want to hug you right now.
Alex gestured at the crowds pouring in for dinner.
You'd better not. Since we're all your extended family here, you've got several thousand heavily armed male chaperones present.
I realized Alex was including himself in that group. At some point during the voyage home, he had shifted to male.
This is...
Amir looked around in wonder.
Sam, this is where you work?
Samira made a sound somewhere between a laugh and a joyful sob.
Yes, my love. Yes, it is. And it's Idol Fetter, isn't it?
Amir nodded. Our families are planning dinner together tonight. Right now. I didn't know if you would be free to...
Yes!
Samira turned to me.
Would you give my apologies to the Thanes?
No apologies necessary, I assured her. Does this mean Ramadan is over?
Yes.
I grinned. Sometime this week, I am taking you out for lunch. We're going to eat in the sunlight and laugh and laugh.
Deal.
She spread her arms.
Air hug.
Air hug, I agreed. Alex smirked.
Looks like they'll need me for chaperone duty. If you all will excuse me.
I didn't want to excuse him, but I didn't have much choice. Sam, Amir, and Alex rushed off to celebrate Eid and eat massive quantities of tasty food. For the rest of us, the evening was all about drinking mead, getting patted on the back a few thousand times, and hearing the Thanes give speeches about how great we were. Even if the quality of heroes was much better back in their day. Above, in the branches of the tree of Leirodr, squirrels and wombats and tiny deer ran around as usual. Valkyries zipped here and there, serving food and mead. Toward the end of the feast, Thomas Jefferson Jr. tried to teach some of us his old marching songs from the 54th Massachusetts. Half-born Gunderson and Mallory Keene alternately threw plates at each other and rolled around in the aisles kissing, while the other Vikings laughed at them. It made my heart glad to see them together again, though it also made me feel a little empty. Blitzen and Hearthstone had become such fixtures in Valhalla that Helgi announced they were being made honorable hotel guests, free to come and go as they pleased, though he made a point to say they did not have rooms, or minibar keys, or any sort of immortality, so they should act accordingly and avoid flying projectiles. Blitz and Hearth were given large helmets that said, "Honorary and Hair Ye," which they didn't look too happy about. As the party was breaking up, Blitzen clapped me on the back, which was sore from all the clapping that my back had received that night.
We're heading out, kid. Gotta get some sleep.
You guys sure? I asked. Everybody is heading to the after party. We're doing a tug of war over a lake of chocolate.
Sounds fun, Hearthstone signed. But we will see you tomorrow. Yes? I knew what he was asking. Was I really serious about following through with my plan? The favor I'd asked Odin?
Yeah, I promised. Tomorrow it is.
Blitz grinned.
You're a good man, Magnus.
This is going to be awesome.
The tug of war was fun, though our side lost. I think that's because Hunding was our anchor, and he wanted to bathe in chocolate. At the end of the night, exhausted, happy, and doused in Hershey syrup, I staggered back to my room. As I passed Alex Fierro's door, I stopped for a moment and listened, but I heard nothing. He was probably still out enjoying Idol Fetter with Sam and Amir. I hoped they were having a great celebration. They'd earned it. I stumbled into my room. I stood in the foyer, dripping chocolate all over the carpet. Luckily, the hotel had great magical cleanup service. I remembered the first time I'd entered this room, the day I died falling off the Longfellow Bridge. I had stared in wonder at all the amenities, the kitchen, the library, the couch and big screen TV, the big atrium with the starry night sky twinkling through the tree branches. Now there were more photos on the mantle. One or two magically appeared every week. Some were old pictures of my family, my mom, Annabeth, even Uncle Randolph and his kids and wife during happier times. But there were also newer pictures. Me with my friends from Floor 19, a photo I'd taken with Blitz and Hearth when we were still homeless. We'd borrowed somebody's camera to do a group selfie. How the Hotel Valhalla had retrieved that from the ether, I didn't know. Maybe Heimdall kept a cloud library of all selfies ever taken. For the first time, I realized that walking into this room felt like coming home. I might not live at the hotel forever. In fact, I'd just had lunch that afternoon at the place where I would probably die someday. Still, this felt like a good place to hang my sword. Speaking of which, I took off my neck chain, careful not to wake up Jack, and set his runestone pendant on the coffee table. He hummed contentedly in his sleep, probably dreaming of Percy's sword Riptide and all the other weapons he had loved. I wasn't sure how I was going to locate the god Braggy and get him to write an epic about Jack, but that was a problem for another day. I'd just pulled off my sticky, chocolate-soaked shirt when a voice behind me said, "You might want to close the door before you start changing." I turned. Alex leaned against the doorframe, his arms crossed over his chainmail sweater vest, his pink glasses low on his nose. He shook his head in disbelief.
"Did you lose a mud wrestling contest?"
I looked down. "It's chocolate."
"Okay, I'm not going to ask."
"How was Ide?"
Alex shrugged. "Fine, I guess. A lot of happy people partying, lots of food and music, relatives hugging each other. Not really my scene."
"Right.
I left Sam and Amir in good company with their whole families. They looked... happy doesn't cover it. Delighted? Ecstatic?"
"Head over heels?" I suggested. "Over the moon?" Alex met my eyes.
"Yeah, that works."
Drip. Drip. Chocolate dribbled from my fingertips in a completely suave and attractive way.
"So anyway," Alex said, "I was thinking about your proposal."
My throat constricted. I wondered if I had a chocolate allergy I didn't know about, and I was dying in a new and interesting manner.
"My what?" I squeaked.
About the mansion, he clarified. What did you think I meant?
No, of course. The proposal about the mansion. Absolutely.
I guess I'm in, he said. When do we start?
Great. Tomorrow we can do the initial walkthrough. I'll get the keys. Then we wait for the lawyers to do their thing. Maybe a couple of weeks?
Perfect. Now go take a shower. You're disgusting. I'll see you at breakfast.
Okay.
He turned to leave, then hesitated. One more thing.
He walked up to me.
I've also been thinking about your declaration of undying love or whatever.
I didn't... It wasn't... He clamped his hands on the sides of my gooey face and kissed me. I had to wonder, was it possible to dissolve into chocolate on a molecular level and melt into a puddle on the carpet? Because that's how I felt. I'm pretty sure Valhalla had to resurrect me several times during the course of that kiss. Otherwise, I don't know how I was still in one piece when Alex finally pulled away. He studied me critically, his brown and amber eyes taking me in. He had a chocolate mustache and goatee now, and chocolate down the front of his sweater vest. I'll be honest. A small part of my brain thought, Alex is male right now. I have just been kissed by a dude. How do I feel about that? The rest of my brain answered, I have just been kissed by Alex Fierro. I am absolutely great with that. In fact, I might have done something typically embarrassing and stupid, like making the aforementioned declaration of undying love, but Alex spared me.
Eh.
He shrugged.
I'll keep thinking about it. I'll get back to you. In the meantime, definitely take that shower.
He left, whistling a tune that might have been a Frank Sinatra song from the elevator, Fly Me to the Moon. I'm great at following orders. I went to take a shower. Chapter 48. The Chase Space Becomes a Place. Odin's lawyers were good. In 2 weeks, all the paperwork was done. Odin had to wrangle with various Boston zoning commissions, the mayor's office, and several neighborhood associations, but he'd cleared those hurdles in record time, as only a god with infinite money and a background in motivational speaking could. Uncle Randolph's will had been fully executed. Annabeth had cheerfully signed off.
I think this is awesome, Magnus,
she said on the phone from California.
You are amazing. I kind of needed some good news right now.
That set my ears buzzing. Why did Annabeth sound like she'd been crying? You okay, cuz? She paused for a long time.
I will be. We got some bad news when we got out here.
I waited. She didn't elaborate. I didn't push. She would tell me if and when she wanted to. Still, I wished I could pull her through the phone and give her a hug. Now that she was on the other coast, I wondered when I would see her again. Did Inheriar ever make it out to the west coast? I'd have to ask Samira. Percy okay? I asked.
Yeah, he's fine, she said. Well, as fine as can be expected.
I heard his muffled voice in the background.
He wants to know if any of his advice helped you on the sea voyage,
Annabeth relayed. Absolutely, I said. Tell him I kept my butt clenched the entire trip, just like he said. That got a broken laugh.
I'll tell him.
Take care of yourself. She drew a shaky breath.
I will. You too. We'll talk more next time I see you.
That gave me hope. There would be a next time.
whatever was going on in my cousin's life, whatever bad news she was dealing with, at least my friends and I had won her and Percy a reprieve from Ragnarok. I hoped they would have a chance at happiness. I said my goodbyes and got back to work. In 2 more weeks, the Chase Mansion was open for business. Our first guests moved in on July 4th, Independence Day. It had taken Alex and me several days to convince them that our offer was serious and not some sort of scam. "We know where you're at," Alex told these kids. "We've been homeless too. You can stay for as long or as little time as you want. No judgment. No expectations. Just mutual respect, okay?" They came in, wide-eyed and shaking with hunger, and they stayed. We didn't advertise our presence in the neighborhood. We didn't make a big deal out of it. We certainly didn't rub it in the neighbors' faces. But in the legal documents, the mansion was called the Chase Space, a residence for homeless youth. Blitzen and Hearthstone moved in. They served as cooks, tailors, and life advisors for the kids. Hearth taught them sign language. Blitz let the kids work in his shop, Blitzen's Best, which was right down the street and had reopened just in time for the high shopping season. Alex and I went back and forth between Valhalla and the mansion, helping out, recruiting new kids. Some stayed a long time. Some didn't. Some only wanted a sandwich or pocket money or a bed for the night. They disappeared the next morning. That was okay. No judgment. Occasionally, I'd pass one of the bedrooms and find Alex with her arm around some new kid who was crying his or her eyes out for the first time in years. Alex just being there, listening, understanding. She'd look up, then motion with her head for me to keep moving, like, "Give me some space, Chase." That first day we were open, the 4th of July, we had a party for our guests on the roof deck. Blitzen and Hearthstone grilled hamburgers and hot dogs. The kids hung out with us, watching the fireworks explode over the hatch shell on the esplanade, lights crackling through the low clouds and washing the Back Bay brownstones in red and blue. Alex and I reclined next to each other in the lounge chairs, where we'd sat after killing the wolf in Randolph's library weeks before. She reached over and took my hand. She hadn't done that since we were marching invisibly toward the ship of the dead. I didn't question the gesture. I didn't take it for granted. I decided just to enjoy it. You have to do that with Alex. She is all about change. Moments don't last. You've got to enjoy each one for what it is. "This is good," she said. I didn't know if she meant what we'd accomplished with Chase Space, or the fireworks, or holding hands, but I agreed. "Yeah, it is." I thought about what might come next. Our jobs as Inherjar were never over. Until Ragnarok, we would always have more quests to undertake, more battles to fight, and I still had to find the god Braggy and convince him to write Jack his epic. Also, I'd learned enough about Othala to know that your inheritance never leaves you alone. Just as Hearthstone had to revisit Alfheim, I had difficult things still to deal with. Chief among them, that dark road to Helheim, the voices of my dead relatives, my mom calling to me. Hel had promised that I would see my mom again someday. Loki had threatened that the spirits of my family would suffer for what I had done to him. Eventually, I would have to seek out the frozen land of the dead and see for myself. But for now, we had fireworks. We had our friends, new and old. I had Alex Fierro next to me, holding my hand. It might stop at any moment. We in Herjar know we are destined to die. The world will end.
The big picture cannot be changed. But in the meantime, as Loki once said, we can choose to alter the details. That's how we take control of our destiny. Sometimes, even Loki can be right. This is Michael Crouch. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard, Book 3, The Ship of the Dead, by Rick Riordan. This program was directed by Simone Barros. Executive producer, Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2017 by Rick Riordan. Production copyright 2017, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.